Tuesday on the Horn, B&E with you, celebrating the birthdays of George Strait and Vince Young today. VY, I was watching LHN's on behind us. Now we have Texas, Colorado, I think circa 2004, maybe. Mm-hmm. Texas up 28-0. VY highlights on his 37th birthday. For the player you believe, Buck, is the greatest college football player you ever watched.
Yes.
High praise, my friend. High praise.
Still do. Still believe that. I don't know if that means anything to anybody, but after watching a bunch of them, I think he's the best I've ever seen.
I think it should. You coached him and recruited and, around Doug Flutie and Ricky Williams, both two Heisman Trophy winners. I mean, that's that you coached and recruited and talked to were around in their peak. And then you still think Vince was a little better because he could run and he could throw. I mean, he just devastated your defense in so many ways. Now, those were really good teams, too, by the way.
They were good. I mean, the recruiting was good. The players were good. They understood about winning. But his speed and his size were
ahead of their time.
Kind of not until that guy lifted me up one time when he gave me that brother handshake, and I went off the ground one time and he gave me a hug. I was like, wow. He's a big dude. Vince is a big old guy.
Yeah, and, how his pro career could have gone differently under different circumstances and his own immaturity. We always talk about that path that he took and, leaving as a junior. Somebody pointed out something because I've always said if he stays for his senior year, they win another championship. If he stays healthy, they win another. He probably wins the Heisman Trophy, and he goes, is the most decorated and widely considered the best college football player of all time if he does come back, because that team was loaded. That Colt McCoy, Colt came in as a freshman, led him to 10 wins the next season. That's how good they were. And Colt played well. But, they would have been otherworldly with VY as a senior. But instead, he went to the pros and he got drafted. And that was the end of those big contracts. Remember, he got like a huge contract.
Oh, that's right.
That was right after that they were changing the rules on, the front end deals for the best quarterbacks.
Last big one was the quarterback from Oklahoma.
Sam Bradford.
That was it. That was the one, $50 million.
And that was ahead of Vince, right? I mean, and so Vince got a hold of that, and he squandered a lot of that money. But at the same time, that situation in Tennessee was unhealthy for Vince. I think that's fair to say, with Jeff Fisher and Norm Chow both wanted Matt Leinart, and the owner, Bud Adams, wanted Vince Young to stick it to Houston. I mean, that was all about spite and what it would mean to – because, of course, Houston took Mario Williams, right? And so, because, look, if you're the owner of a team, Bud Adams, Houston knows what type of owner he was. If your coach and your offensive coordinator and your general manager say, no, we want this quarterback, and you say, no, we're taking this quarterback, which is the owner's right to do, but it's going to lead to tensions and it's going to lead to problems, and it did. And, and was Vince ever fully embraced? And then, Vince was his own worst enemy. And then Steve McNair was tragically killed, that was a big turning point in Vince's life. Steve McNair, who was a great quarterback for the Titans, obviously was also a father figure and a mentor to Vince. And that's when things really started to spiral for Vince after his...
And he had his own demons, too.
Who? Steve Young?
Steve McNair.
Steve McNair, no question. But he was... if before his passing, if there was one sounding board that Vince could go to that could try to relate and understand, and Steve McNair was good for him, and then he was gone. And, but again, you go back to Vince, he was 30-17 as a starting quarterback in the NFL. He was an all-rookie player. I was at the game in Houston when he, in overtime, took off and put his head back and ran for a touchdown to beat the Texans. That was a phenomenal game. I mean, it wasn't like he was a losing quarterback. There's a lot of chump quarterbacks out there that are a lot. I mean, Vince was 30-17 as a starting quarterback before things really derailed with Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, he had it. I mean, he had all the gifts. He had all the tools. It just didn't work out for him. Yeah. It just didn't. I mean, doesn't work out for everybody.
And different time, different place, different coach that he's playing for that was more an advocate of his. And at the same time, Vince was his own worst enemy, and the league was about 10 years behind. I mean, if Vince is walking into today's NFL, where Lamar Jackson's the MVP,
right?
Well, Vince is Lamar Jackson, but he's 6'5" and 235.
That's right.
35. It's a whole different ball game now. Vince would definitely be more embraced as a player today instead
no
of,
doubt.
Jeff Fisher and Norm Chow wanted the pocket passer and the play action and all the things that, Matt Leinart was about that year. And, of course, Leinart never turned out to be a great quarterback either.
Let me ask you guys this. On the Dallas Cowboys, where do you see this group making their change, and when is that turnaround going to happen?
Who, for the Cowboys?
Yeah. 2 years, 3 years before it really, really starts to change? I mean— Are they all of a sudden regrouping and becoming this team that's going to be playoff worthy, a couple wins in the playoffs, or do you think the following year or the following year after that? Where I know you say as long as Jerry Jones is there, they're not going anywhere or whatever, but is this a group that maybe 2 years from now should have it going on? Because my expectations are it's not going to go on next year. You know, it's the way I look at sort of like I look at the Longhorns. I just think there are so many teams that are that have gotten better while you stayed kind of the same or even got worse last year. And especially when you look at the defense, yeah, I think it's more than I don't think they're jumping up and biting anybody next year. I think this is going to take it to this is 2 to 3 years before the Caliboers are really in it.
Well, and I mean, they got to make good decisions that to be accurate that in 2 to 3 years they'll be in it, right? I mean, these draft picks they took this year have to hit. Michael Parsons has to be really good. The kid they took in the second round, the corner out of Kentucky, has to come in and start and be a good player.
Yes.
You know, the Cowboys, the last time we could say the Cowboys felt like they were on a trajectory towards what you're talking about was when they got Wise within the draft and began to take the best player and built their offensive line. And then they built this offense, and then they tried to do the same thing on defense. But let's look back at the history; would tell you that the picks that they took didn't hit. I mean, the players they took, you know, the offensive line players hit. Tyron Smith and Zach Martin, and gosh, those guys were awesome. I mean, that was the best offensive line in football with Zeke Elliott, and then that allowed Dak Prescott to begin his career. And you know, they felt like they built a Super Bowl caliber offense. And then they tried to do the same thing on defense, building mm-hmm. through the draft, not using free agency.
And they didn't get any players. They got players, but
I think at the end of the day, the result was they didn't hit on their defensive picks because, you know, outside of DeMarcus Lawrence, who's kind of hit or miss at this point, who's their standout defensive player? And they've got standout offensive players, but they don't have standout defensive players. So, you know.
Yeah, Parson has to play this year. He has to be a really key point. I know you're trying to find places to put him. You need to put him someplace where he'll have some success and will help your team out.
And then
the cornerback's going to play corner. There's nobody better than the kid that's coming there. So you can say what you want about him being a head case and the kid from, was it Kentucky?
Yeah.
That guy's good. He's better than those other guys now.
We'll see. There's a big transition from college to pro. Even Trevon Diggs came from Alabama.
He struggled a little bit.
And, you know, just being a rookie, learning the game. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And those guys that you're covering have been playing for a long time. And they know the speed of the game and how this works. And so, I mean, I can't expect him to walk in and be a hugely impactful player. Can he be better than what they had? Sure. But, I mean, I don't know.
If he's better than Diggs was in his first year, would that be satisfying as a cornerback?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's a piece. I mean, they just don't have any pieces right now. I shouldn't say any. They have very few cornerstone players on defense, and that's just failures through the draft.
So they got no safeties.
Remember, they traded a first-round pick to get Amari Cooper, which gave away a first-round pick, and then they used their pick that year and their first pick in the second round to take Tristan Hill to the defensive tackle from South Florida. He's done nothing. You know, that'll tell the tale of the Cowboys in the coming years is how these young defensive players improve and pan out. Do they? And I'm not just talking about this year's class. I'm talking about last year, the year before that.
Yeah, right.
Do some of these dudes start playing and start showing up and becoming impact players? Because, you know, if they don't, then you're still going to have a bad defense with a good offense, and they have to because you're so upside down on the salary cap with the signing of Dak Prescott on top of Amari Cooper and Zeke Elliott and that offensive line. You're very top-heavy expenses-wise on your offense versus your defense. And because you gave Dak the big deal, you really don't have a lot of salary cap space to go out and add pieces in free agency.
But that's not happening in a year then. No.
I don't think so. Yeah. Can they be in contention for their division this year? Sure.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely. But can they beat Tampa Bay?
No.
Can they beat even Green Bay if
Aaron
Rodgers is
back?
Beat the Rams. And that becomes the tale.
It's 49ers, about, no.
I mean, we can't say that until we see these defensive players perform and play good defense. And maybe it was Mike Nolan and the scheme and COVID, and it was just a disaster of a year with the injuries everywhere. And maybe Dan Quinn will have a better, more sound defense. Remember last year when they were giving up on plays? Like the Cowboys didn't even – I mean, they quit on plays
yes,
last
they did.
Year. The Cleveland Browns walked in there and hung 49 points on them. I mean, they did that over and over where they didn't even try on defense. It was almost like there was a disconnect between the coaches and the players. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was embarrassing. We talked to Ed Tuttle-Jones about that just on Friday of how bad that was. Now, so it can't be as bad on defense, so it has to be better. And I would argue with that, if the Cowboys stay healthy, they can be better this year and be right there with the Washington football team And we'll see what Philadelphia is about with Jalen Hurts for that division. That's where I kind of expect them, right? 8, 9, 10 wins in a 17-game season. But as far as Super Bowl, no, I still, they've got to.
Well, I mean, going deep, going two weeks into the playoffs. I don't know. I don't. This to me, this is a Super Bowl. You better hold on for a couple years before you even think that. But can you get two wins in a playoff? Can you win your division and win two? Probably not.
Yeah,
they're not there.
Well, this says next year Elliott and Cooper can be unloaded for less. That's true. I mean, you get through this year, you can clear some space with your overpaid running back and your overpaid, highly paid wide receiver. We can debate whether he's overpaid. But the Cowboys have given huge contracts to those guys, and they have not seen the success that you would hope to see. All right, so we've got that conversation, the football conversation. We've got, can I play this? You know, the new head coach of the Detroit Lions is a guy named Dan Campbell. You recruited Dan Campbell when he was a hard-nosed tight end coming into college football?
Yes, indeed.
I think you've told me the name of the town, like Azle, Texas, or some little country town out by past Waco. You've told me where you're from.
Yeah, it's almost near Fort Worth.
Okay. Well, Dan Campbell's now the head coach of the Detroit Lions, and we played highlights of his introductory press conference, and he came off kind of a meathead, you know, kind of a, you know, which maybe that's too strong a term, but there were some Jim Tom Sula moments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a rah-rah guy, but can we hear Dan Campbell? It turns out, to as he builds his culture in Detroit, he thinks the Lions should have a – well, let's let Dan Campbell talk about what he wants at the facility.
I'll tell you what I would really love to do just in general, and I've talked to Sheila about this. I don't think we're going to be able to do it, but I would love to literally just have a pet lion.
Yes!
Just a legit pet lion on a chain, a big-ass chain, and he really is my pet. We just walk around the building. We go out to practice. We're in 7-on-7. We're behind the kicker when he's kicking. We're just there we are.
You know on the sidelines, yeah. Yeah, you should. You know what you should do is you should get two of them and put them on each sideline and just teach the guys not to go out of bounds. Don't try to be – don't avoid contact.
And I – on command, you could train him. Like, if one of your groups isn't doing well, you could just take him over to their section and just have him take a dump right there in the middle of where their section is at, and then bring him on back. Yes. I mean, think about it. It'd be outstanding.
Before the game, you could walk the Lions up and down the opponent's sideline and have them pee and poop all over the sideline, and then they have to deal with that all game.
Yeah,
here
that
we go.
That would be outstanding. We're going somewhere. The problem, I don't know if Pete is going to allow that.
I don't think so.
Believe me, though, we would take great care of it. It would be fed well. It would be petted. It would be manicured. I might end up losing an arm because of it, but that would be even better, you know, because it would validate what this is a freaking – this is a creature now. This is an animal. This is from the wild.
Would you give up an arm just to motivate your team?
Ooh,
possibly.
For Super Bowl. If I said, Dan Campbell, you are going to win a Super Bowl in Detroit.
Yes.
There it is. One arm.
Yes.
That your move, Mike Vrabel.
You give up your arm?
All right, there we go. There's Dan Campbell.
And I only said to Chris Beard, they don't like basketball. I mean, I could get a job in Detroit after that, after hearing that. I could get a gig there. You know what I mean? After hearing those two, I could get that gig. We had a guy that was like that. He was the head coach of Texas. That kind of meat.
Well, the Mike Vrabel reference was the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, who's done a nice job there, by the way, in Tennessee.
I did like him on draft day that 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, when he had the bathroom photo.
That was great.
But he was asked on a similar podcast, would he give up his manhood to win a Super Bowl? And he said, yes, he would. And he said he's married, he got three kids. He said he doesn't use it anyhow. But to win a Super Bowl. But that's where that goes. I root for Dan Campbell because he's a...
You should root for him because he's going to be there for about a year and a half
Glen
or two.
Rose,
and
Texas.
Then he's going to be gone.
Glen Rose, Texas, we've been told.
And then he'll be an assistant coach again.
And, you know, there's just... Sometimes there's guys who are good assistants and guys... I mean, you're the boss. Is this what you want? Is the head coach walking around with a tiger?
No,
or a lion on a leash?
I'd just rather have a boss.
I'd rather have a coach.
Yeah, or a boss or a coach or whatever.
A lion on a leash.
I mean, I've seen what that kind of coaching does. I've seen a guy who headbutted guys on the sideline before they got a head coach. I'm not talking about a strength and conditioning coach.
Not wearing a helmet, they are, and headbutting them.
Does that make any sense?
Sledgehammers and lockers and things and hard hats.
Put your face on somebody.
Does that make any sense?
Well, no.
Don't you want to see the boss?
Because coaches coach. Strength coaches do that kind of stuff. The strength and conditioning coach, they get people fired up.
Even assistant coach every once in a while try that.
Sure.
To jump in there, jump in the pile.
who was the coach? Someone will tell us this on the text line. They had the axe and the stump in the locker room. They thought it was a good idea to, like, I'm all for, like, motivative things that are creative.
I like those. I like row the boat. That dude was good, right?
PJ Fleck.
Rowed that boat.
Well, that was like imagery.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah,
didn't actually
yeah,
get
yeah.
in a boat and row it, did they? It was this, you know, we're all in this together kind of thing.
I'm trying to think at some time they probably took a picture in a rowboat, took some pics in a rowboat, rowing the boat.
You know, you're to win, you got to beat guys like Bill Belichick. And
there's a lot of young guys out there that you're going to have to beat.
Gosh, Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan and.
He's from Glen Rose, Texas.
Yeah, no, several people have mentioned Glen Rose. That's where you went to recruit him and had a nice dinner at the Campbell House back when he was an 18-year-old kid.
Yep.
But I understand you have to change the losing mentality of Detroit, but I don't know that a live pet lion is going to.
Why don't you just give him, you want to make the players believe that you're a tough guy. But Dan Campbell, he shouldn't have to do that. That guy's career, that's what he was. He's a tough dude. Plays tough, you know, the whole works. But I think once you got to the coaching ranks, you kind of back away from the table and be the boss. Let somebody else do that stuff.
Jeff Howe from the Light the Tower program, who was the first to uncover the scent of said poop yesterday, has sent us a nice text to say that Jack Del Rio had the axe and his punter gashed his leg trying to cut the stump. That is true. He had to, like, cut the punter after he's, like, whacked himself. Yeah, I mean, Jack Del Rio, he's a linebacker. Dan Campbell, tight end. You know, sometimes you just said you want your coach to be tough. I actually, if I'm a football player, which I'm not, I want the smartest coach.
Yeah.
I want the smartest coach. I want the Bill Walsh, which the genius, of course. I want the smartest guy who's putting game plans together.
Someone just said, pretend tough guy.
Fake tough guys.
Fake
What's tough that in the NBA,
guy.
Zay? The fake guys?
Fake tough guys, Zay.
A lot of fake tough
NBA's
guys.
NBA's filled
yeah,
with them.
I think somebody said about Durant, and Durant said about somebody.
Yeah, yeah, Kevin Durant, the fake tough guys.
Fake tough guy.
Yeah, I think Dan Campbell's a tough dude. I mean, I think he is a tough. I don't want, you know.
Well, he's trying to change the culture, but it's Detroit. It's tough enough. Playing there.
You know, else was a tough, old tough tight end with your Minnesota Vikings? Our man, Mike Tice. Remember Mike Tice, the sign of a good captain?
He became head coach.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
I'm hoping for Dan.
Yep.
Hey, this lady's tough too. Can we play a little of this audio, Zay? I know Zay screened it for us, but apparently a lady. Let me get the full details on this because I just wanted to hear this audio because it sounds funny. But a lady, where was this, Zay?
Florida.
I'm looking to go ahead and say Dateline Florida. I think that's a good idea. But a lady got her nose ring caught in a chicken coop fence, apparently. And can we hear some of this? Her friend came over, tried to help her. So you got a nose ring.
Yep.
Caught. You've had chickens before.
I have.
A little wiry chicken coop fence.
Oh, yeah.
I want to hear some of this.
Come on!
Pull it apart.
I don't know.
No, come on,
dude,
man.
That sounds like it's going to hurt.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? They couldn't get it out. That went viral yesterday on social media. Don't
What's
know
cool
you know
is
that.
They had to cut out section of the fence with that big thing on her face pinned against her nose. That's great, that chicken wire.
Also, we have this. This was going to be in Salacious Gossip, but we had too much today. There's the story of an Australian surfer killed this morning in a shark attack.
Oh, that sucks.
59-year-old guy trying to catch a wave in the waters off of New South Wales and at Tuncurry Beach. Shark in the water. He did not survive.
That sucks right there.
59-year-old guy still surfing. I give him credit. He's out there.
Well, I guess you'll never have to worry about me on a board.
In the shark's house?
That's the shark's house.
Because that's what I'm thinking about with this Dan Campbell thing. It's like, well, what's going to happen when the lion goes lion and you're...
Yeah, and he takes one of your hand off.
Well, he said he'd give up his arm for a Super Bowl, but what if you got players, you got people around. That's a bad idea.
No. That's too bad about that shark deal.
All right. Somebody said, cut the wire, idiot.
They did. It's on her face right now. They cut a big round hole on there.
All right, we come back. We'll preview Texas and Rice tonight. when baseball also, you know, what the Longhorns as an athletic department are on the verge of, and the Texas baseball team can finish the deal. Details coming here on B&E on a fun Tuesday. Live, local, and digital, streaming on your smart speaker, on your Horn app, and always at hornfm.com.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Is that a George Strait song? I think I've ever heard that one.
That's George.
There it is. Happy birthday, George and Vince Young today. That's a fun one. Reggie Jackson. It's one of the better birthday days. May 18th. Mm-hmm. You've got one of the great college football players of all time in Longhorns and VY. They're having VY Day on the Longhorn Network, it appears, today, because just keep showing great Longhorn performances with Vince. George Strait is 69, Reggie Jackson is 75, and the Pope would have had a birthday today, Pope John Paul II. So it's pretty good when you've got the GOAT, the King, Mr. October and the Pope.
That's pretty good stuff, yeah.
And you know, a lot of Catholics' favorite popes was back in the day. Hey, so Buck, we've got all kinds of conversations going on. They're all kind of all over the place, but dog poop and lions and as mascots for Dan Campbell. And but one of the things, you know, I heard, I think Brad Kellner gave this stat yesterday, which I think is bears repeating and discussing, that the Longhorns, you know, last night I didn't mention this in my headlines, but I should have, shame on me, that the Texas men's tennis team over on the 40 Acres rallied to move forward in the NCAA tournament for men's tennis. They came back. They were down 3-0, but four straight singles wins, and they are on to the quarterfinals in men's tennis. But point that out, and this is why I think a lot of people are excited for where the football program's going, where the basketball program can go, because it is fair to say that the level of success that Chris Del Conte and that athletic department have brought is pretty remarkable. To this level, Buck, do you know in this calendar year, even through COVID, Texas has won 12 conference championships in all the sports, 12, which is a new Big 12 record. It equals the Big 12 record. And that means that the Texas baseball team, if they can catch TCU in their final four games here of the regular season, three of the Big 12, they would take it over the top in all time, and it would be 13. That would be 13 regular season Big 12 championships. And, you know, they've done it across the board. I mean, that's a pretty high water mark. And the last time Texas did something like this, it was back in the 2000s, right? 2005, I think it was. But to win the Big 12 in 12 different sports, both men's and women's tennis, it was clinched over the weekend when the rowing team won another Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then both Texas men's and women's track and field teams swept the outdoor events of the Big 12. So congratulations to the team over there at the athletic department. 12, and David Pierce and the Longhorn baseball team have a chance to make it the lucky 13.
Yeah, just keep doing your job. Keep doing what you're doing.
And you and I have been doing this since the late 90s, and so we've seen when it gets going. And I think that's the excitement for Texas fans. You know, the new South End Zone's going to be done and open up in the fall. There's a new arena for basketball going up. Chris Del Conte has, you know, lived up to his promise of building the best facilities and then demanding that every team all the teams at UT compete in the top 10 in the country in their respective sports. And, you know, we've seen that. You know, Karen Ashton was a good basketball coach for the women, but, not enough. So they went and got Vic Schaefer and paid him big money to come, and now, you know, they feel like they're heading in that direction. Same with Chris Beard and the basketball team. And
semi softball, the whole works.
Yeah, Mike White and softball. I mean, they're still going. They're going to host the Austin Regional this weekend. Yeah, every program in the last 3 or 4 years has really taken it to a new level, and that's the hope for Sark and I think the Texas football team, because that's the final piece. That's the final piece in basketball. I mean, those are the two revenue sports you would like to see. I mean, because one thing you say about the Texas basketball team last year with Shaka Smart, they did compete in the top 10 in the country, and they did win the Big 12 tournament championship.
Yes.
Their season ended in a disaster to Abilene Christian, and then Shaka was gone. But, you know, I think Chris Beard's going to have this basketball program into a pretty good place pretty quickly, and the last piece to the puzzle would be football, to get them back competing in the top 10 in the country and in the conversation for big things.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more time on growth for your football team with that many players and with, well, that much inconsistency there. This guy will change it. He'll change that whole thing. But expectations, be careful for your expectations. They'll always be high at Texas. It doesn't matter. I can say be careful what you expect, but at Texas it's always high. It just is. Well, whether it's rightfully deserved or not, we'll see. But they'll get there. I believe this is a guy who can get them there and get the recruiting back and just get the fundamentals of the game back. You know, as we watch the 2000s and the way the players played and how smart they were and how physical they were, and I mean, that just has to change.
It does, and that's, you know, better coaching, I think, would be the fair point. We're just talking about, you know, Tom Herman and headbutting players, and you know, not always giving his team. I think of it this way, that we talked to Ed Too Tall Jones on Friday, and he said, you know, when we played for Tom Landry, we knew we were going to be the most prepared team on the field.
We didn't win them all, he said, but sometimes they were just better.
Yeah, we got our butt kicked sometimes.
Yeah, he said they were just better than we were.
But we as players never felt unprepared. We felt overprepared.
And that's, by the way, that's a great feeling if you're a football player.
Yes, yes.
When you have to take the field and you're, as you said, at times you feel like you're overprepared. That is a great feeling. The worst thing to do is go out and be undercoached by whether it's your position coach or your head coach, and they don't give you that kind of confidence, because that means they didn't practice that way. You didn't practice that way. So,
well, and I think, you know, that would be at least my read, and covering the Tom Herman teams, they were we talk about disconnect between players and coaches. I feel like sometimes the players didn't believe the coaches were putting them in the best positions with the decisions that were being made in real time, the game plans that were being installed, the remedial pass game offense that I felt like they brought to the table, and I think the players could see that and were frustrated by. There was no exotic offense. There was no, and then, you know, the poor fundamentals on defense. I mean, players know that. Players' parents, when they watch the games like we do, watch that and say, gosh, guys.
But I think when your new head coach comes in and he says, some get it, but there's others that just don't get where we're at right now. And that takes some time. That you don't walk in there and be coached by like three different people, three different coaches, three different position coaches, different coordinator, and another new guy walks in and says, this is how we're going to do it. We're really going to make you better. You know what, you look at him like, yeah, I kind of heard that before. Yeah, I've heard that before.
And they're all going to tell you that, right? And then you go through your drills and you go through your offseason, you go through your camps. But it shows up on game day. Are you the more prepared team? Did the coaches get 20 hours a week with the players, and then the players can do their extra film study, but it's the coaches burning the midnight oil. It's the coaches there till all hours to devise a game plan to attack the weakness of the opponent. It's the coaches who install that, and then on game day, call the right play at the right time. The coaches, and we've seen this for the last couple of years in my mind with Matt Campbell at Iowa State. Matt Campbell's coaching staff have beaten Texas with coaching. They've beaten them with a better game plan, a better control of the game in the game, and little old Iowa State has all of a sudden beaten Texas in back-to-back seasons when literally, for every analytic, they have no business beating Texas.
Yeah, and you know this.
They've done it with coaching.
It's not demanded on game day. It's demanded at football practice.
No, I think it's demanded a combination of both.
Every stinking day, every time you go into the, you know, every time you go into the weight room, every time you go into the classroom, every time you're out in public, but every time you take that football field, You gotta give everything that you have. That's tough to do. It really isn't easy to do that extra two or that extra four or that extra whatever it is. It's easy to say, I'm there, I got it.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm tired. I'll do that extra one tomorrow.
Yeah. No, I think
I'll catch up to what I have to do tomorrow.
It's full bore, but I do think in the last couple of years we've seen prime examples of, in the heat of the moment, the Texas coaching staff freezing and not giving the team the best chance to win the football game, whether it was a scheme. Gosh, I think of the Iowa State game 2 years ago in Ames when the Longhorns took the lead, and you know they did it throwing the ball with Sam Ehlinger and five wide receivers, and they couldn't cover them all. And
then they go back to running.
Then they go back to running. Players notice that. Players can understand
sure
that
they
just
do.
Like we can. You know, we trained all week for this, coach. We're here. We're with you. We're working hard. Put us in the best chance to win this game. Don't start to take the air out of the ball here late in the football game. We saw that pretty consistently with Texas, and that, I think that wears on a locker room for sure. And the opposite is true to what you said with Ed Too Tall Jones. When you feel like you walk on the field like you are at Alabama, that we're more prepared than you, we're better than you, and we've got the better game plan, we're going to kick your butt. I mean, that's how you take it.
When they walk onto the field, they let everybody know, hey, this is for four quarters. This is not for three and a half quarters where we take a two-touchdown lead. Guess what? We'll be in the fourth quarter, the same exact guys in the fourth quarter when we play with 3 minutes to go in the game. That's when Texas will be back. When they get to that point where 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, that's the same group that was out there in the first quarter.
And that's what I'll be looking for this year for Texas.
Yeah, me too. I really will be.
Is the preparation week to week. The other signature of a Tom Herman team was the week to week. They'd look great 1 week and then back down. It was an up and down team. You want to see consistent performance, consistent game plans, and then the coaching staff actually helps the team win a game that maybe they shouldn't win, right? That maybe they had no business winning that game.
But they make $700,000 or $800,000.
Yeah, that they dialed up a play at the right time, and this is what we watch Matt Campbell do all the time. Lincoln Riley is the best in the Big 12. That's why they win it every year. Is he gives his team the schematic advantage on game day? I mean, you say it all the time. How's that guy running wide open? Well, their coach, saw a weakness, attacked it, built a play to build around it, and
someone on the Specs text line says
the guy wide open.
Third place is not an option. That's easy for you to say. It's not an option. It's not third place. It depends on how you're developing. That's all I want to do. I want to see this thing just start to really, really develop. That for years to come, once it gets to be consistent, it stays consistent again.
Correct.
No doubt. And I think this is the group. Actually, they can get that done.
I do love this coaching staff, at least on paper. Experience they bring, the Power 5 experience they bring, the championship level experience they bring across the board on those staffs when you're bringing guys from Alabama.
That's why I like the schedule. That's why I like the schedule coming up this year. The two teams that they play, those are really meaningful, tough-ass games.
Yeah, no doubt. With Louisiana in 109 days and then Arkansas in Fayetteville with Sam Pittman's team. Those will be good challenges to get you primed for the Big 12 schedule. All right, well, there you go. A little Texas football talk. Props to the athletic department. They're winning at an incredibly high level across the board, and can football follow that in 109 days? We'll all be anxious or eagerly anticipating seeing it for the first time. B&E with you coming back. We'll reset your top stories, get you ready for a busy Tuesday, including the play-in games in the NBA tonight. They get going. It's the play-in tournament. We'll explain it to you and get you ready for those games this evening, plus Texas baseball. It's B&E on the Horn.
The Horn's text line is brought to you by Specs, your tailgating headquarters with a Texas-sized selection of lower-priced everything. Cheers to savings. It's Bucky and Aaron.
That's right, George Strait, his birthday today. We've been playing his hits throughout the morning. That was our B&E fact of the day. His first ever number one hit back in 1982, Full Hearted Memory. And then 59 more after that, including this one. Pretty good for old George Strait. Vince Young birthday. Hey, Buck, in addition to the Longhorns with 12 Big 12 championships in this calendar year in the athletic events that they participate in, which is blowing away the competition, the next closest is Oklahoma State in the Big 12 at 6, but 12 for the Longhorns. In addition to that, this is also a pretty intriguing, or at least an interesting note where Texas is athletically. Their athletic teams have reached the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament this year in women's basketball, volleyball, men's tennis, and now women's tennis. And there's still baseball and softball coming. And most people assume baseball has a chance to make a deep run.
Sure.
And possibly to Omaha. Speaking of the Longhorn baseball team, they'll play tonight against Rice at 6:30 if the weather allows it. Coming up on Light the Tower with Jeff and Craig, it'll be Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com. Longhorns up to number 2 in that poll. He'll be on with them in the 11 o'clock hour to preview the final week of the regular season and what's to come beyond that. Regionals, super regionals, RPI, power rankings, all of that. Because while the Longhorns didn't play last weekend, how did they jump from 5 to 2 in one weekend? Well, the teams ahead of them lost over the weekend. Louisville had a bad weekend. Some teams in the SEC, I can't remember which teams in the SEC had got.
Plus TCU was ahead of them and they won that series.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were
ahead of TCU last week at the poll at number 5. TCU dropped to 6. But Louisville got swept this weekend. It was good for the Horns. And now they're up to number 2 in RPI in the country behind only Arkansas. And Arkansas is number 1 in all the polls right now. Razorbacks are really good. That's a team to watch for. Texas lost to Arkansas way back in that tournament up in Arlington. But Longhorns and Rice tonight, and we're crossing our fingers for the weather this week, Buck, because the Longhorns have that game plus the 3 with West Virginia.
Big games, too.
Oh, huge, because they can bring home that 13th regular season Big 12 championship.
True.
Our friend Colonel Craig Flowers texted and said that the TCU-Texas State game for tonight's already been canceled. And I think that's 3 straight Tuesdays now that TCU's had to cancel baseball games because of the weather. up in the Metroplex. And they haven't been playing well. You know, TCU was in Texas, went in and took two out of three, and then they lost two out of three to Louisiana Monroe. They're not going to get a chance to play a game tonight because of weather, and now they have to go to Lawrence, Kansas to
play
Kansas.
You only need to lose one, and you win them all.
That's right. And that, but the hope would be that there's no weather factor with rain delays and all that that goes into it, but looks like it could become, and West Virginia will have to deal with it too.
Now, do you play this game, these games, no matter what, with the rain, because our championship is on the line here?
Yeah.
I mean, do you play it later on if you have to?
I'm sure Craig and Jeff will have more on that. I mean, I think you have to play them, right? I mean, you don't. I guess you go to a winning percentage conversation, but you know the fact that these are Thursday, Friday, Saturday games, I think is part of that is to make sure you have Sunday available if you need it to play a game if you had to, because you do want to make sure you play all the games ahead of the Big 12 tournament next week.
Right.
So, yeah, that's coming up with West Virginia and the Longhorns, and we'll talk to David Pierce, our weekly visit on Thursday. So we'll actually talk to Coach Pierce on game day ahead of the first
cool.
game. And let's hope they can get in tonight's game, because last week they tried to played four innings and got lightninged out against Texas Southern. They'd like to get a full nine innings tonight over at the Dish. We'll see if that's going to be possible. If it is, you'll hear it right here on the Horn. Also tonight, Bucks, 5:30 tonight is the tip time for the first of the play-in games in the NBA. I know you will be eagerly attentive to your big 75-inch audio-visual consultations television.
Who we got tonight?
You've got first game, Charlotte Hornets
mm-hmm.
facing the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, there's a good chance I'll still be sleeping. Go ahead, give me another one after those two.
That's a 5:30, though.
Okay, but I'll be sleeping.
You'll be in your pajamas. It's not asleep yet, then.
Not asleep, but my eye will not be glued to that
game.
Say
who wins that game tonight. You got LaMelo Ball on a national stage, really, for the first time as far as a big game. This is a big one, the 9-10 matchup. Who you like?
Hopefully Charlotte. I know ESPN and the NBA, they would like to see LaMelo Ball in the playoffs at that eighth seed. So I'm rooting for the Hornets tonight.
Okay.
All right. So that's the first game. And remember, the winner of that game will then play the loser of the second game tonight, which will be Washington and Boston. That's Bradley Beal, Russell Westbrook against the Celtics and company.
Demise of the Boston Celtics. Yeah, I think I'll stay up late for that one.
You want to see the Washington get this done?
Of course I do.
Well, we'll see. So the loser of that first game is out. The winner advances to play the loser, because the winner of the second game tonight becomes the seven seed. Right? They're going to end up as the seven seed. So let's say, you know, Boston, or if Washington beats Boston tonight,
mm-hmm.
Washington would then be the seven seed automatically, and they would face Brooklyn in the first round of the playoffs starting this weekend. Boston, as the loser, would then play the winner, which would be, in Zay's mind, Charlotte, and then the winner of that game becomes the eighth seed. Does that make sense?
And play...
That's it. Then they're in. Then they're in. They're
the Sixers?
They would play the 76ers in the 1-8 matchup.
Wait a minute. Boston's liable to lose on purpose tonight.
Because they would rather play Philadelphia than Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Well, possibly. You run the risk in a one game, because like Boston, they can lose twice and then they're out. If they win once in the second game, they're in as the eight.
It's another way to rig it up.
Well, and then on Wednesday, they'll do the same thing in the Western Conference. Spurs
right.
will play Memphis. Winner will play the loser of Lakers Golden State.
Yeah, who would you rather play? I'd rather play Sixers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. With Brooklyn healthy?
Look out for the tank job by the Celtics tonight.
Ooh, are you calling that to your cousin?
By the way, I'm calling that one. Tank job coming up.
Well, both teams, Washington and Boston, both know that a loss puts them into the game the next night, but avoids potentially
That's
Brooklyn.
Right. That's
well,
right.
Well, are we going to turn it on? They're both going to try to lose in the fourth quarter?
Oh, no.
I mean, how do you pull that off?
Wow.
The NBA does want Russell Westbrook versus Harden and KD.
Oh, no.
Ooh, that would be pretty good.
Time to call a cousin.
All right, enjoy the games tonight. Longhorn Baseball, 6:30. That first play-in game is 5:30. Your Yankees are in Arlington to face the Rangers again tonight. Astros are in Oakland. It's a busy night, so we'll be talking about all that tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. And keep in mind, if you head out to that Round Rock game tonight, Jake Odorizzi makes a spot start trying to get a rehab assignment in on his way back to the Astros. So, had Framber Valdez yesterday. It'll be Odorizzi tonight. Have a wonderful Tuesday. We'll hit you on a Wednesday morning, 6 a.m., every hour of this show podcast at hornfm.com.
NASCAR is coming to Austin, and the Horn is bringing you all of the action from the track. Rodney Rodriguez and Stu Myrick are partnering up to bring you driver interviews, the latest on standings, insider information, race notes, and more. NASCAR hits Circuit of the Americas, May 21st through 23rd. The Horn's NASCAR pit crew will have the latest on air and online at hornfm.com. NASCAR coverage on the Horn, brought to you by Busch Light and AMM Collision.
Folks, how about a great car buying experience? You can get that. Jaguar Land Rover of Austin. It's that unique car buying experience that you certainly deserve. And a huge part of it, well, it's the Snell family. The Snell Family Motor Company has continued their great success since 1973. And they do believe this. It is a privilege to be the provider of all your automotive needs. Telephone number is 512-236-0000. They're at 5th Street. And when you go by there, how about checking out the 2021 F-Pace Jaguar? They've got it all there. They've got the Land Rover, the Range Rover, the Discovery Sports, and the 2021 Defender, the SUV of the year. Say hello to Damon Spears and the gang over there at Land Rover, and they're the 9-time Pinnacle Award winner for overall performance in automotive. That's just what they do. Their success, well, it's right there for you. Their success starts from the top to the bottom, but there really is no bottom at Jaguar Land Rover. When you enter that beautiful showroom, as I've said before, you may be a customer, but when you leave, I guarantee you this, you're going to be part of that great family over there. Come experience the team at Jaguar Land Rover of Austin. Jaguar, no ordinary cat, no ordinary car, and of course, Land Rover, above and beyond, 1515 5th Street, Austin, Texas.